Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by University Hospital, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Ordinarily, we discuss recent headlines and how they affect our listeners before we break for our first commercial on Sunday mornings. Of course, we've already done that this morning, but also, in a way, sometimes the headlines are much bigger picture than just what we can do in 2 or 3 minutes. Recently, it seems we can't turn around without seeing a headline about new sources of lead being found in something we see in our homes every day. Certainly the recalls of toys with lead-based materials are in the news over and over again. We've even heard lipstick may have lead in it. So with so many questions about lead poisoning, we decided to invite Maureen Famigletti, the program coordinator for the Central New York Lead Poisoning Resource Center, and a registered nurse to join us this morning. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you've been talking about lead poisoning for many, many years, haven't you?
I have. For about 19 years I've been in this field.
19 years, but I bet you've never been so busy as you have been in the last couple of months, have
you? That's very true.
But let's start with some basics, because lead's really been around for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Lead's been in our environment as long as man has been producing and manufacturing things. We know back to the Roman Empire that it was in the pipes that they carried their water, their wine goblets. There's a lot of evidence that it may have contributed to the fall of the Roman Empire.
Really? Oh, my gosh. Well, from the fall of the Roman Empire to the fall of toy manufacturers, let's talk about why it's such a problem in toys. How is it being used in these toys?
It's been being used in a number of ways. The most obvious way is painted toys. And in China and some of the other countries where the major toy manufacturers in the United States have gone for production of their toys, there is free use of lead paint, despite the fact that it's not supposed to happen. The other way that it happens is the plastics themselves are created with lead in them.
Right in the plastic.
Right in the plastic, right. So those are two major sources of this particular way of getting lead poisoned.
That makes me think, then, that you can't really just look at a toy and tell whether it's got lead in it.
No, you can't. You really can't.
All right, we're going to talk more about how to figure that out here in a minute. The other source of lead paint that I know of is in older houses.
That's right.
Speak to me a little bit about that. I know that it's banned, so how can there be lead paint in houses still?
It was only banned in the United States finally, totally, in 1978 for residential home use. There are still paints that legally actually now can be sold with lead in them, mostly for marine use and external bridge use and things like that. But until 1978, you could still go to the store, buy paint that you could use in your house that had some lead in it. And, of course, we know that every house that was built before 1978 is not gone from our world.
Well, of course not.
And even if you put a new layer of paint over it, over time, that newer paint will break down and the older paint becomes accessible to the people who live in the house.
I see. All right. So now we've got lead perhaps in houses. We've got lead perhaps in toys. How does it make people sick?
It happens in a variety of ways. Children are the most vulnerable. We know that. And the younger the child, the more vulnerable. We know that even before birth, if a baby is exposed to lead in utero, studies have demonstrated that they may be smaller in size, and that their first 2 years of life they may be developmentally not quite up to the child who hasn't been exposed. And we know that young kids, certainly through their age 5 or 6, are most vulnerable because lead affects your brain more than anything else when you're little. And your brain is developing, growing, creating new ways of working throughout those 6 years very rapidly, and lead interferes with that process in a number of ways.
So are there symptoms then that a child's been exposed?
The difficulty is that the symptoms generally don't occur at the time of the exposure. The most dangerous time for exposure is from about 1 to 3 years of age, because those are the kids that are normally putting their hands and everything else in their mouth. That's normal development for kids that age. They explore the world with their mouth. So they are putting things in their mouth, either toys that have gotten dusty from sitting on the floor, or they're at the windowsill looking out and actually gnawing on the windowsill, which might have leaded paint in one of the layers of paint that's on that windowsill. And because they're small in size, they don't need a whole large exposure to have a serious lead level in their system. And that's when they get exposed. But they don't appear very sick usually, unless it's extraordinarily high level. And they then begin to show symptoms of that exposure, usually around 4 or 5 years of age, when the exposure may be long over.
All right. Now, I want to ask you about those symptoms, but I want to go back for just a second. Are you saying then that the way they're exposed is always through the mouth, or can they be exposed just by perhaps being in the same room?
You can also get exposure by inhaling leaded dust.
That occurs
more often in a situation where there's active renovation or repair work going on in the house, and you disturb the walls, or you pull the windows out, or you sand and create a lot of dust. But it's also possible when the windows are open and the breeze blows through the little flakes that are in there.
Anything that will kick up the dust.
So inhalation exposure is actually a risk for everybody in the household, the adults. Pets can get lead poisoning, too.
And that answers another question that I had, is whether adults can be exposed as well. And pets,
absolutely.
Wouldn't have thought about pets. Interesting. All right. So now you say they show these symptoms. What do we see? If a child is exhibiting symptoms, what do we see in that child?
The largest group of symptoms are around areas that they call executive functions in your brain. Things that help you to organize yourself, pay attention, listen, make good decisions for yourself. And those kinds of skills start to be needed when you enter a school situation, preschool, kindergarten. And these are the children that mom and dad get the report home. He's having a lot of trouble sitting still. He's having a lot of trouble following instructions and things like that. And you begin with that, what might be relatively small problem, and as time goes by, it creates more and more of a situation for that child in a school setting, and almost inevitably there's failure.
Oh, boy. If a child's exposed when the child is young, will that exposure continue to cause problems even if the lead is taken away, even if the child's no longer exposed?
Unfortunately, yes. Once the damage has been created, you can't undo it. The best thing you can do is identify the problem as early as possible and stop the exposure limit the amount of damage that might occur.
You know, I'm almost thinking that if I were a young couple having children now, I wouldn't live in a house that was built before 1978. Is that a good suggestion?
Well, if it's possible, the next best thing is to know what you're living with and to take care of the house properly. And it is possible to protect your children from those exposures and to do repairs and renovations safely so that you don't create new exposure.
Mm-hmm. How do you tell if a child really does have lead poisoning? Do they go to the doctor? How are they examined? How are they diagnosed?
It's a simple blood test. That's really the only way to know for sure that whether your child has at that point in time lead poisoning. There are other things that have come out in the newspaper or in magazine articles, testing hair or urine or other things. They really do not reflect the child's lead exposure. The only way to do that is with a blood test. Nobody wants their children to have blood drawn, but it's a relatively simple test. It's paid for by all insurance policies, and it's relatively inexpensive.
Okay, very good. All right, let's switch now to the toys, because we've got the holiday season coming up. Grandparents are going to be doing a lot of shopping. How can we tell which of these toys have lead in them? Are they still on the shelves? Have they all been removed?
Understand that they have not all been removed. There may be locations, stores that either didn't understand the recall list or somehow have not removed all the toys.
All right.
My suggestion is that you find a list, and there are a number of websites out there. The Consumer Product Safety Commission and some of the manufacturers have web lists of the toys that have been recalled.
Mm-hmm.
And if possible, print that list out and take it with you when you go shopping.
Be as diligent as you can. You know, we'll make sure that we get those links and put them on our HealthLink On Air website. What about toys that are already in the home? Can they be washed? What can we do with them if we think they might have lead in them?
If they've been identified as on the recall list, the only thing you can do is get rid of them. There isn't any way to fix them. Washing them won't take care of it. It's embedded into the plastic, or it's in the paint that's on the painted toys. And there is no way to make them safe.
I see. All right. Can listeners contact you if they have more questions about this?
Absolutely.
What area do you cover?
Okay. The Resource Center covers this 14 counties in the Central New York area.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly would not hang up on you if you're not in one of my counties, if you want to call. But you can reach us at University Hospital. The phone number is 315-464-6000. 7584.
7584. And we'll make sure we put that on our HealthLink on Air website too. And also, I think if someone called Health Connections, they could get transferred to you as well.
Right.
Is there anything we've missed? Is there any last words of advice? This is something that parents and grandparents have really got to be aware of.
Right. And parents need to be proactive with their physicians. If they are concerned and they ask for the blood test and the doctor seems to feel that it isn't necessary, they need to push forward. And it's very important to understand that all children at their first birthday and again at their second birthday are required by state regulations to have that blood test done, whether or not you think they have been exposed to lead.
Really? At their first and second birthdays?
Right.
And so that's something parents need to be watching for too.
If the doctor doesn't offer the test, you ask for it.
Very good. Well, Maureen Famigliotti, thanks so much for taking us behind this very frightening headlines about lead poisoning. We appreciate your time this morning.
You're welcome.
And listeners, we do need to take a break now, but we'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned. This is University Hospital's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.